Hear NFL legends, players, coaches, and media members from around the country sharing their insights and stories with us year-round. Here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Tailgate.
All right, now joining us is the second member of our 2018 Guest Hall of Fame class, Chad Brown. This is Chad's 11th appearance with us. He first joined us back on March 29th of 2012 on episode number 28. And again, here we are celebrating our 7th anniversary and episode number 356. So Chad's been a great friend for a long time. He shared so many great stories with us over the years, from his playing time at his alma mater, the University of Colorado, to when he was drafted by the Steelers. We've talked about his teammates, two of which that he played next to in LaVon Kirkland and Greg Lloyd, who are also great friends of the show. LaVon is also in our guest Hall of Fame. Chad's given us insights into his time in Seattle, what it was like playing for Bill Belichick, and, you know, what made him such a great coach, which we'll touch on again here in a minute. Chad is now a fantastic broadcaster doing games for the Pac-12 Network, Westwood One, and ESPN. He was inducted into the University of Colorado Athletic Hall of Fame last year, and it has been a privilege getting to know him, and we are so honored that he is now a member of our guest Hall of Fame. Hey, Chad, Chris and Bob here. Thank you for being such a great friend over the last 6-plus years.
Well, thank you for bringing me in. Certainly an honor, and thank you for the bat. I got that at my office last week. It's going on display at my little office memorabilia case. So very happy to be back on with you guys.
Chad, I wanted to start our time with you tonight by talking about work ethic. You've been at the top of the game at the college level, at the NFL level. You were a 3-time Pro Bowler, obviously great at Colorado, being inducted into their Hall of Fame. And then after you retired from the NFL, you've made yourself into a great broadcaster. Talk about your work ethic and what it's taken for you to get to the top 1% in a couple of very competitive industries like the NFL and broadcasting.
Well, you know, it's so funny that, you know, you're giving me credit for this work ethic. And, you know, I in turn have to give credit to great coaches and great parents. And that's where the credit really lies. I don't think a great work ethic, you're just born with that. I think somebody helps instill that in you. So whether it's, you know, my father, James Brown, not that James Brown, but a different James Brown, the hardest working man in Pasadena, not the hardest working man in show business. I'll tell you a quick story on that real quick. In Pasadena, my high school, John Muir High School, we play our crosstown rivals, Pasadena High School, in the Rose Bowl, in a game that's called the Turkey Tussle. It's an annual tradition in the Pasadena area. So it's kind of a big deal. And for a high school player, you know, that game is a game you've had circled on your calendar, not just that year, but for years and years before that. I get the opportunity to play in the Rose Bowl. I get to be in the Turkey Tussle. Hopefully we get a chance to ring the victory bell. Well, the game is on a Saturday night at the Rose Bowl. My dad wakes me up on Saturday morning and says, "Hey, man, we got some yard work to do." And I say, "Well, Dad, I got the Turkey Tussle tonight." He's like, "That's tonight. Today, we got some yard work to do." So, yes, on my senior year of the Turkey Tussle, I spent that morning mowing and edging the lawn, learning exactly what a work ethic is about. Your work ethic is not situational. It's not on what do you have to do later or what, you know, could possibly be more important. It's what we have to take care of right now, today. So, you know, my father instilled that lesson to me a long time ago in a very visceral way with that lesson about the Turkey Tussle. Yeah, you got a game tonight, but we got work to do right now, son, so let's get it done.
That's awesome. And Chad, let's take that a step further. When you're talking with kids of all ages, whether kids in elementary school all the way up to guys playing, you know, at the college level, maybe at Colorado, or even young guys coming into the NFL, what message do you want them to take away after they've had an opportunity to spend some time talking with you?
That effort is not negotiable. Effort is not a variable. So if I'm coaching you, or, you know, whether it's on a team or some kind of private coaching, or I'm just giving a speech, I recognize that everybody cannot be the same player. So I can't expect you to be a great receiver or a great offensive lineman. I can't expect you to have, you know, all the knowledge of the game or have all the techniques. But I can demand that you give great effort every single time we hit the field. that's the one thing that you can automatically take care of by yourself. When you get out of your mom's car, or you get off the bus, you come out of your sixth period class, whatever the case may be, when you step into that field and out of that locker room, effort is a non-negotiable. It just has to happen. So, you know, I think sometimes people think, oh, you've got to do all these amazing things to be a great player. In the words of Pete Rodriguez, who was one of my special teams coaches when I was with the Seattle Seahawks, and Pete had a great way with words, he would always say, I don't want you to do extraordinary things. I want you to do the ordinary things at an extraordinarily high level. So an ordinary thing is just giving great effort. But if you give, you know, fantastic effort each and every time, that takes care of so many things. The other player on the other side, he may lighten up. He may not be willing to give the same effort you are. So even if he is a better player, even if he's bigger, even if he's stronger, even if he's got a better background than you, simply by giving great effort every single play, every single snap, every single practice, you'll beat people who have more attributes than you but don't have the same effort level as you.
Chad, changing gears just a little bit, I want to get your thoughts on what's going on in Pittsburgh. The Steelers look like a very undisciplined team. Their defense looks lost, and they have so ever since Ryan Shazier went down. Antonio Brown has always seemed to me to be a guy who cares more about his stats than the team. Ben appears to be trying to force the ball to him at times because he knows if Antonio doesn't get his, he's going to get upset. What are your thoughts on what's going on with the Steelers right now?
Well, I think you put the correct word on it, undisciplined. So even going back to the playoff loss of last year where Jacksonville destroyed them, the defensive backs played a very undisciplined style of defense. So it shows up over and over and over again with this team and with an organization that, you know, once was, that was not the case. Even if you're going to go back to, you know, Joey Porter getting arrested after a playoff game a couple of years ago, it's even showing up in the coaching staff. So I've got tremendous respect for Mike Tomlin and what he's accomplished in the NFL. But I think he needs to take some time and really bring in some guys and some coaches where that is going to be at the forefront of their mind, is that discipline. Because it reflects so many different ways across this team, whether it's mistakes on the field, whether it's Antonio Brown yelling at coaches on the sideline and demanding that he get the ball. Whether it's, you know, Le'Veon Bell and his way of going about his contract negotiations, just discipline and being undisciplined is now not just a media topic. It's causing you to lose football games. So thinking about the Denver Broncos, and they had 2 years of some undisciplined football. So with this year's draft class, they made a specific point to go to guys who were either 4 or 5 year seniors, guys who were team captains in college. And it's the amazing thing is, while this draft class may not be the draft class that came in with the greatest physical attributes or the biggest upside to their playing skills, this is the draft class over the last 4 or 5 years of John Elway's tenure that has made the most immediate impact. All those guys are playing. Even an undrafted guy like Philip Lindsay from University of Colorado is making plays. Cortland Sutton, the second round receiver from SMU, is making plays. Bradley Chubb, the fifth overall pick in the draft, he is starting. So all these guys who they brought in, maybe not were the best absolute players for the draft slot, but because they came in with a great track record of being disciplined guys, that was the reason why the Broncos brought them in, and they're finding out, guess what? Disciplined guys make plays because they're disciplined in the meeting rooms. They're disciplined on the practice field, and while you may have a guy who can jump higher and run faster, he doesn't help you because he doesn't know the plays. So, you know, I have to believe that the lessons of being undisciplined showing up for the Steelers and Mike Tomlin, and then the lessons for the Denver Broncos going out and getting disciplined players, other teams and other coaches are going to notice that and begin to try to go after those kind of guys.
Bob, questions for Chad?
Bob, questions for Chad?
Yeah, Chad, congrats on the award once again, and I want to revisit your days in Pasadena just for a second one more time here and ask you, Chad, when you were growing up there, as far as were you involved in a lot of different sports, and are you an advocate for athletes to play those many different sports if they're on their way to a major league of some type?
You know, it's so interesting now, the youth sports arena, and I'm not sure if you guys got kids who have recently, you know, been involved in youth sports, but it's become very, very, very specialized. And I think to a certain extent, not to a certain extent, to a big extent, to the detriment of the kids. And the opportunity to go out and play multiple sports is now lost for today's kids. You know, if you do, you know, serious baseball, well, that's travel baseball. And over the course of a summer, in 3 months, you may play 150 games. You may play 6 games on a weekend or 7 games on a weekend. And for me, growing up, part of the best part of growing up was to play sports in a very unsupervised fashion. Go to the park with my friends and play some stuff and just work on imitating, you know, Kareem in the hook shot. Not some coach telling me, you got to use your right foot and you got to roll off your middle finger and why are you doing it wrong? Just me working on my game, but also working on relationships with my friends. Conflict resolution. You go to a park, you foul somebody, there's no adult or ref supervising it. It's some kids working it out together and learning how to play together, how to be teammates. I think kids are missing that. So that's one aspect. But just think about some of these amazing athletes that we watch today in the, or watched in the past and the things that they learn from other sports. The Hakeem Shake, the Hakeem Olajuwon Shake down in the paint, that was from his soccer background. So that footwork came from soccer. For me, learning to use basketball, which I played as a kid, in my football game and the ability to use, you know, you don't think of your butt as a tool in football, but when you're a pass rusher and you want to spin off of somebody, you want your butt to come in contact with that guy as you spin around him. That's the same thing as playing center down in the post, trying to maneuver down the post. I learned that on the basketball court. I didn't learn it on the football field. So I think these kids today are missing out on the lessons of, you know, some of those other things I talked about, but they're missing on some of the things they would gain if they played other sports because these things, they transfer. Footwork transfers. The ability to maneuver somebody transfers from sport to sport. So I know the focus of this, you know, radio call and your show is football, but these things in other sports, they transfer directly, and these kids are missing out on that.
Those are all great points, Chad. And when you got to the NFL, we've talked to guys all the time, almost 100% of them, Chad, will say the biggest difference between college and the NFL game is that speed at which it goes. Was that the case for you? And when did you first notice that, my goodness, maybe I'm not at Colorado anymore?
For me, I was lucky enough to be on a University of Colorado team the year that we won the Orange Bowl in 1990. Of the 11 players we had on that starting defense, 10 guys went to the NFL. Wow. And then on our offense, we had talented players as well. Mike Pritchard ended up being the fifth pick in the draft to the Atlanta Falcons. And Eric Bieniemy went in the second round to the San Diego Chargers. So we had amazing players. So sometimes our practices were, not sometimes, a lot of times, were much more difficult than the actual game. So it wasn't the athleticism. It wasn't the speed of the game for me making the transition. It was the amount of mental work that you had to put in to be a quality NFL player, not only to learn what your defense was doing. And Dom Capers and Dick LeBeau certainly ran a pretty complicated defense with that Blitzberg stuff back in the day, but also trying to, you know, diagnose and understand what your opponent was going to do week in and week out and how they were going to attack you. So that was the biggest difference. You know, in the old Big 8, which I played in, you know, back in college, it shows you how old I am. It wasn't the Big 12. It was the old Big 8. Offenses were fairly simple. Most teams ran the ball. Most teams ran the wishbone. Nothing like I saw at the NFL level. So it took a little bit to get the mental part of the game down for me.
Chad, just a couple more before we let you go. And your University of Colorado Buffaloes are off to a great start so far this season. 3-0 heading into their game against UCLA next Friday night. Washington is the only currently ranked team left on their schedule, though they've got Utah, Cal, and Washington State, who are also all having good seasons. Is this a Colorado team that could get themselves in position to be in the playoffs?
Playoffs, I think, is quite lofty. Into a bowl game, that is a possibility. I think Stephen Montez, the quarterback, matured his body last year but didn't really mature his game. This offseason, he had a chance to go to the Manning Passing Academy. Kurt Roper, who worked with Eli Manning, is now the quarterback coach for University of Colorado. So his jump with his quarterback play has showed up. Laviska Shenault has been I believe is still the leading receiver in the entire country. He's a guy who's, for the folks outside of Colorado, seems to have come out of nowhere. We've been hearing about this guy for a couple of years with the Buffs. And that defense, which took a big step back after Jim Leavitt left 2 years ago to the University of Oregon, has now taken a step forward from where they were last year. So a couple of factors have gotten this program going back in the right direction. I think they will be a bowl team, but the quarterback play and the explosive play of the receivers has a possibility of being limited by what is not a very strong group up front at offensive line. So in the end, this team will only go as this offensive line as far as that can take it.
Chad, one of the things we've talked about before, but for our listeners who are tuning in for the first time tonight, what makes Bill Belichick consistently more successful than every other coach? What does he do that's different than what everybody else does?
I'll sum it up this way. He teaches you what the right play is for the right situation. So, you know, there's certain teams that want to go after very athletic guys. I did an internship during training camp with Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks. And Pete's thing is he wants long guys with long legs, long arms, and very athletic guys. So he thinks that's going to make him successful. And obviously the Seahawks have been successful. What Bill wants is guys who understand what the right play is for them to make in the right situation. And because he's able to teach you what that situation is and what that right play is, you don't need to be a special athlete. When you think about a guy like Teddy Bruschi with the New England Patriots, Teddy was certainly, you know, any NFL linebacker is a great athlete, but not all of them are amazing athletes. Teddy was good, but not an amazing athlete. But what made Teddy an extremely successful player for the New England Patriots is he took Bill's teaching to heart, and he understood what each situation was in the game. Therefore, he understood what the right play would be for those situations. So when you see him making an incredible interception on Peyton Manning in the playoffs, or a strip tackle of Edgerrin James in the playoffs, those plays came from situational understanding, not from being a truly amazing athlete or a truly amazing player, but it came from the mental part of the game. So I think that's what separates Bill from other coaches, is they don't have that same ability that Bill does to teach the mental part of the game. I had been in the NFL for 12 years, part of a Pittsburgh Steelers team coached by Bill Cowher, part of a Seattle Seahawks team coached by Mike Holmgren, and even Dennis Erickson was a coach in Seattle. So all guys with either Super Bowl or national championships to their credit. I learned more in that first year about football in year 13 of my career from the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick than I did in the previous 12 years combined. And it was mind blowing to me that you could go out and just simply, by just playing good, clean football, wait for the other team to make mistakes because they don't understand the situations and the right plays to make in a game. And it was shocking to me that philosophy could be successful, but it clearly was. They were coming off of back-to-back Super Bowl win when I joined the New England Patriots, and I've watched them obviously incredibly closely even after my career is done. That philosophy is a incredibly easy philosophy to follow because you don't have to out-athlete people. You don't have to out athleticism or have better players than them. You just have to be smarter than them. And you can teach that. You can bring guys in who are 7 athletically, and they can go out, beat another team who's 9 athletically because you understand situations and you understand football and you understand the right play to make. It's an incredibly successful philosophy, and I'm surprised more teams don't try to do things that way.
Chad, before we let you go, let our listeners know, how can they stay up to date with all the great things you're doing and follow you either online or on social media?
You can find me at ChadBrown94 on Twitter. That's my only social media outlet. I'm too old to try to figure out anything else at this point. My kids keep giving me a hard time for not trying to learn any of the other stuff, but Twitter is what works great for me. So if I'm at a Bronco game, maybe live tweeting that, certainly you can keep track of me and my travels during college football season. This week I have Texas A&M at Alabama for Compass Media. Last week I had New Hampshire at Colorado for the Pac-12. So you can follow all my football travel at ChadBrown94 on Twitter.
Well, Chad, it's always great having you as part of the show. You're clearly one of our favorites. Always a privilege for us to get to spend some time with you. Thank you so much for being such a great part of the show over the years. My boss, Earl Parker, wants to send along his thanks. He says, you know, love 94. He was always a beast out there, so you've got his support as well. Congratulations on being a member of our 2018 Guest Hall of Fame class, and we hope you'll come back and join us again real soon. You're one of the best.
Well, thanks for having me on. And just one more quick story. I heard you guys talking to Dan Pastorini right before you came on. You were asking about the Astrodome. What I remember about the Astrodome, this was at the very, very end of the Astrodome, was each time my Steelers beat the Houston Oilers, they shut off the hot water in our locker room. So it was not a very fun smelling bus ride or plane ride back to Pittsburgh, because they shut the hot water off and a lot of guys didn't want to take cold showers. So that's my memory of the Astrodome.
That's horrible. Thank you for sharing that, though. And Chad, thank you so much again for being such a wonderful part of the show over the years. We look forward to having you come back and share more of your insights and stories with us again real soon. All the best to you and your family, my friend.
All right, thanks, guys.
That is former Steelers, Seahawks, and Patriots Pro Bowl linebacker Chad Brown. We've got our next guest, Mark Collins, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Mark on the other side of this quick station break.